Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the FortCast, the official podcast of Fort Healthcare. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Anderson, ear, nose, and throat doc, and president and CEO of Fort Healthcare. I'm very excited to have our guest today. We have with us assistant professor in the Department of Urology at UW in Madison, Dr. Christopher Manicus. Dr. Manicus, welcome to the FortCast.
Wow, it's a pleasure, Mike. Thank you for that introduction. And it's an honor to be here talking to the Fort community about upcoming Prostate Cancer Awareness Month in September.
Yes, thank you for that lead-in. That was well done. Yes, September is Prostate Cancer Awareness Month. So who better to talk to us about this is Dr. Manicus. So I'm an ear, nose, and throat doc, but I will say, Dr. Manicus, I do have a prostate, so I'm going to be learning a lot during this podcast, so I appreciate your time. So I've been with Fort Healthcare a little over 20 years now. It's hard to believe that. You know, where do the years go? But tell us a little about yourself, where you did your training, and I know you're at UW now, and maybe how long you've been in practice.
So I'm actually originally from Indiana, very near Chicago. I grew up in a small town called Valparaiso, and did my undergraduate at the University of Illinois in Champaign and played a bunch in the bands down there. Decided to pursue medicine and did my medical school at Indiana University and finished my urology training at the University of Wisconsin-Madison Department of Urology. That was way back in 2010. And I decided to stay in Wisconsin for good. And it's been my home since 2005 when I started residency. And after residency, my wife and I and our then one child decided to move to the great city of Fort Atkinson. Actually, we live in rural Jefferson County between Cambridge and Fort. And I was a member of the Fort Medical Group, proudly working with Fort Healthcare for the better part of 8 years from 2010 till 2018. Together with Dr. Craig Kosler, did our best to try to provide quality care to the Fort Atkinson and surrounding communities in Jefferson County, as well as some time in Beaver Dam and other places, but really have fond memories of my time in Fort. And in 2018, I joined the Department of Urology at the University of Wisconsin. And my practice since then has been very heavily focused on prostate disease, though mostly it's benign prostate enlargement. Every urologist deals with patients who are looking to try to address some issues in the bathroom that are associated with aging, as well as concerns about possible prostate cancer.
Well, we're happy to have you. I know you continue to serve the Fort community, Jefferson County community, with all their urologic needs. So as we talk a little bit more about prostate cancer awareness, the first thing I'd like to ask you about, Dr. Manicus, is screening. So at what age do typical people start to be encouraged to get screened? And then what are the methods of screening when looking for prostate cancer?
So I think we take a step back. If it's okay with you, we'll do a quick refresher of some basic anatomy and physiology. And I won't ask any questions on your podcast, Dr. Anderson. I don't want to tap into the cobwebs about exactly what the prostate does, but I'll go ahead and volunteer. The prostate is a reproductive organ. Its function is to make semen. And so every man has a prostate, and that prostate does a couple different things as we age. And starting at about age 30, that prostate starts to grow in a non-cancerous way that can grow in different rates and create enlargement of the prostate that interferes with urination. And those changing symptoms in the bathroom, that getting up at night, the urgency and the frequency, the having a difficult time starting your stream, sometimes as far as having to have a catheter put in because it's so uncomfortable, so full that you can't urinate on your own. The vast majority of the time, those symptoms are from that non-cancerous enlargement, that BPH, okay? So the common misconception is that you're going to feel prostate cancer, and the reality is you're not. And that's why we have to use whatever screening tools we have to try to catch it when we can do something practical about it. And yes, breast cancer, you have a mammogram. And although we don't have a mammogram for men, we happen to have the luxury of a very specific blood test that's not on your standard panel of labs. But there's a blood test done in men that are interested in pursuing early detection of prostate cancer called the PSA. Do you remember what that stands for, Mike?
prostate-specific antigen.
Well done. And that was no prep. He knew that, and listeners, he knew that off the top of his head. He didn't even look at his notes.
Hey, and for full disclosure, and this is hard to believe, all through med school, residency, I never did a urology rotation. It's the one field I had never been exposed to until I came to Fort Atkinson and I met the urologists.
Wait. And then we couldn't stop talking about urology.
And then we've been talking about it ever since.
Yeah. So yes, PSA, prostate specific antigen. You kind of draw the distinction, number one, between the BPH or the non-cancerous prostate growth that happens. That's what's going to lead to changing symptoms. And then you've got prostate cancer, which can also happen. Okay. In fact, both of these conditions are incredibly common. These BPH that 80% of men age 80 will be suffering from to the point that they want to pursue treatment. Now, prostate cancer is not nearly that common, but there is overlap and they are completely unrelated. It's not like a big prostate comes from prostate cancer. Though every now and then it is though an extreme minority of patients, you do get some symptoms from prostate cancer related to urination changes. Though again, that's going to be your less than 2% of total patients diagnosed with prostate cancer. So we want to try to catch it early. And the only way to do that is with this PSA, because if you wait until you can feel it, often you've waited too long. And that's where this blood test, you know, urologists don't usually get involved with the screening process. That's going to be between the primary care physician and the patient. And we take a lot of different factors into consideration as far as who is going to benefit most from screening and when. I think listeners out there, depending on what source you might Dr. Google for yourself, or even what validated medical literature your provider is relying on, there's going to be some conflicting information about how to best screen for prostate cancer. And there's conflicting information, and for good reason. You have to take a lot into account as you're trying to decide, do we do this blood test that might lead to other tests that might be uncomfortable, that might lead to a prostate cancer diagnosis that maybe we don't need to be treating aggressively. And so I want to get to the kind of core of the controversy, if you will, about PSA utilization and early detection of prostate cancer. The fundamental issue is PSA is actually really good at finding prostate cancer. So good that it finds cancers that 80% of the time, those cancers are so slow growing that the treatment, whether it's surgery or radiation, no matter who does the surgery or what version of photon, proton radiation you might have, no matter how good the billboard says it is, there's always side effects. And we have found that the side effects of treatment in the majority of patients who have these early stage prostate cancers, the side effects far outweigh any benefit that the treatment might be providing them. Even if that cancer is found at a young age, whether that's someone in their 40s, 50s, 60s, or 70s, we find these slow-growing prostate cancers, and we know the treatment often does more harm than good. Now, of course, all the details matter. We always take into account the patient's preference and concerns about living with the diagnosis of a cancer, but you can imagine, Mike, you know, it's fun to kind of bounce around these concepts of, you know, finding a cancer and not treating it, because that sounds good. I don't want to deal with those side effects. Great. Well, it's a very different set of circumstances, though, when you have to look somebody in the eye and say, you've got a cancer, and everything changes. And that's the core of the controversy, that that word means a lot. So much so that there's a growing number of urologists that are trying to change the name of these earliest stage prostate cancers into something that's not cancer. Because there's not a single person listening to our podcast that hasn't been affected by that word, cancer. And so we take it very seriously. We take all of the different factors into account as we try to weigh the pros and cons of prostate cancer screening. But the blood test is a flawed tool, but it is the best tool we have.
Wow, that was a wonderful explanation, a lot to take from that. When you do have a concerning PSA level, does that automatically lead to a biopsy, or is there any imaging that's done, Dr. Manicus? Can you take us through that process?
Before we even get that abnormal PSA, I have that conversation with the patient about should we even check it, and knowing that we might find a cancer that we're not going to treat aggressively. And the men who should be screened the most aggressively are those that have a family history, if they are African-American or if they have some other genetic testing that's shown increased risk of cancers in general. Those men should start having an annual PSA blood test at age 40. And then this is according to a guideline from the National Comprehensive Cancer Network. And so for everybody else, age 45 to 75, those men should have a PSA, regardless of risk, once a year, understanding that it might lead to these other tests that we'll talk about in a moment. But having that trend is so incredibly valuable, that trend going back to age 40 or 45. And more often than not, I'm meeting a patient and they've had maybe one or two numbers that are maybe just outside the normal range, keeping in mind that that normal range is in many ways arbitrary. And it might say 0 to 4 in your my chart or my compass. And it's saying it's abnormally high for your age. Well, let's take a moment, not panic about any one number. We want to validate that number as the most important next step. If you ever have an abnormally high PSA, regardless of age, we want to validate that before we make any decisions based on one number. And maybe that's just checking the number again in about a month or say even 3 months. But at that point, every patient who has an abnormally high PSA should consider asking for a referral for a urologist to talk about the ins and outs of next steps, because we're going to help you weigh that decision-making about, is this something I want to pursue? Get into some of the details about your symptoms and talk about what is often the next step after an elevated PSA has been identified, which is further diagnostic testing. That next step is a sophisticated type of MRI called a prostate multiparametric MRI. And as it turns out, Fort has one of the best magnets in the state, and we get beautiful pictures in Fort that we use to peer into the prostate in ways that we never could with, say, a standard finger exam, a rectal exam. That rectal exam gives us a basic assessment and will tell us if there's enlargement or obvious abnormalities that suggest prostate cancer. But the MRI is superior at giving us information that might lead to biopsy. Maybe it allows us to talk about pros and cons of avoiding a biopsy. Depending on what the specifics of the circumstances are, MRI doesn't always lead to biopsy, but it might see things that are suspicious for possible prostate cancer. And there's a lot of variability in the interpretation of MRI. It's still a subjective test. You got skilled eyeballs on very skilled radiologists looking at this, but you do get varying opinions depending on the quality of the images obtained, the experience of the radiologist. And so we happen to have a great group of radiologists from UW that come out to Fort and look at all these films with us. And we make sure that they're high quality images, high quality interpretation. And then we talk about if biopsy is the next step. And as you mentioned, I still take care of patients in Fort at the UW Health Specialty Clinic in the hospital. And about a year ago, we happened to deploy the most advanced version of a prostate biopsy that you can get in 2024, which is an MRI ultrasound fusion biopsy. This is something that people will travel from all over the state to come and have done because they don't have it up in Wausau or Marshfield or in the Fox Valley. You've got to come down to Madison. And I've got patients coming up to Fort from Northern Illinois sometimes because it's the best place for them to get the care. It's a biopsy that might be necessary that overlays the MRI image with a live ultrasound. And so we're able to target, and Mike, you'd love this if you ever saw it in person. It's urologist proof. They actually give me a bullseye to hit on the image.
Don't you love technology sometimes? I mean, wow, that's great.
Yeah. So you go through this process of getting the MRI and biopsy if necessary. And then only a biopsy, though, can tell you with any certainty that you do or do not have prostate cancer. There is no blood test that can tell you with certainty. And that's where all of PSA is helpful. It's just a tool.
So this newer biopsy, it sounds like it's really accurate to overlay images from two modalities to get a target to biopsy. Sounds very accurate. Is that the case?
Absolutely. We'll go back 40 years to say the mid 80s, say even early 90s, before ultrasound was readily available in urology clinics all over the country. It was truly a guide, you had a finger in a patient's backside trying to guide the biopsy blindly, basically to sample the prostate and cross your fingers, hope for the best. That was the best we had. And for many years, decades even, and this is still standard of care in so many other urology practices, it was an ultrasound guidance alone, where the ultrasound, never seeing cancer, okay, was just helping you guide biopsies to do a fishing expedition of the prostate. You're systematically mapping it out like a grid, taking samples, hoping that if there is a cancer there that you hit it, and then waiting for the results. Now, what this modern MRI ultrasound fusion technology gives us is MRI assessment and then targeting of areas that in many cases never would have been hit by a standard biopsy. And it more accurately characterizes the extent of disease sooner in the disease process. So you find a prostate cancer, you can say, well, we can see it on the MRI, it's small. And that's all there is. We know it's low grade. We know, though, that low grade is safe to monitor. So we can just monitor this using MRI moving forward, if that's the shared decision-making between the urologist and the patient. Just as one example of how MRI can help in so many different ways. But yes, it leads to a much more accurate biopsy than we ever were capable of 5 years ago.
That's pretty amazing how rapidly it's changing. To summarize, so a lot of prostate cancers are slow growing, and you have to follow trends in PSA. A singular PSA isn't necessarily the end all be all. You have to follow the trend of that PSA. And if the trend is worrisome, there's a highly accurate biopsy technique that we have available today that wasn't available 5 or 10 years ago to guide us to find out truly if you have prostate cancer, but to hopefully guide us in our shared decision-making process moving forward. One option is to just monitor it and not have more treatment done beyond that.
Yeah, that's a fantastic summary. And what I really want to talk about next, though, is as much as prostate cancer with early detection using PSA identifies a lot of slow-growing cancers, of course, there's a large number of men every day that are diagnosed with prostate cancers that do need to be treated. Okay? And that's where the details, of course, matter when it comes to the aggressiveness as it appears microscopically to the pathologist. That's called the grade of the disease. And then there's the stage of the disease. And so anytime someone has a new diagnosis of prostate cancer, there's a process that establishes, well, okay, in plain terms, how bad is it? And has it left the prostate? Has there been evidence of lymph node enlargement or spread to, say, the bone or elsewhere that would affect what treatment options would be most appropriate to tackle that specific cancer in a way that's going to give the patient the best possible outcome? So that's what we do if someone is diagnosed with a prostate cancer that we want to pursue treatment on. It's let's characterize it as best as we can. And what something that we have now that we did not have 5 years ago, truly, was a PET scan. Most folks who have dealt with a cancer of various forms have heard of a PET scan. Well, a PET scan fundamentally is using a combination of standard CT or an MRI and then some very sensitive imaging modalities that look to see, has the cancer spread on a microscopic level? And we didn't have that for prostate cancer until recently. And it's a special kind of a PET scan called a PSMA PET scan. And that's been a real game changer as far as further characterizing the cancer and helping guide men through their decision-making for treatment. In general, once you've established a stage of the cancer, then you work towards, well, what are your priorities as far as side effects? Because the majority of cancers say they're caught at early stage, but we need to treat it. Well, those men are going to have a choice between surgery to remove the prostate or radiation, often radiation in a combination with certain hormonal treatments that starve the cancer of its fuel. Prostate cancer is uniquely fueled by the male hormone, testosterone. And a lot of the advanced prostate cancers that present, say, a stage 3 or stage 4 prostate cancer, those treatments will involve some of these anti-androgen therapies that suppress the male hormone and put the cancer to sleep in many times for a decade or more. They're very effective, especially and depending on the specifics of grade and stage of the disease. So there's hope, there's a lot of treatment options available, and We have a multidisciplinary team of cancer specialists at the UW Carbone Cancer Center that partner with Fort, actually, at the Johnson Creek Cancer Center, where there's a state-of-the-art radiation treatment facility, cancer doctors, both for the medical version of cancer treatments where chemotherapy might be necessary, as well as radiation oncologists that are there on a regular basis. And I've had several patients that I've sent there from the community to talk about their cancer, as well as get the treatment on a daily basis. Because radiation, as you're aware, you know, it's frequent trips to Johnson Creek daily, 5 days a week for 7 days compared to Madison. That's a big difference for a lot of folks in our community. And I strongly encourage them to go out there if there's a opportunity for that. So there's a real collaborative effort, though, and opportunities for study enrollment if patients are motivated to help not just get the state-of-the-art care, but help develop care for others in the future, that we all are grateful for their willingness to step into it for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And just overall, when people have cancer, any type of cancer, today we're touching on prostate cancer, the treatments are highly individualized. It takes a wealth of information. It takes conversations with multiple disciplines, oftentimes, to really assess someone's best course of care. And of course, that includes the patient themselves and what they want to do and what they feel is important for them. It's a highly individualized process. So you really can't fit everybody. If you have X stage, then you get Y treatment. And I think our collaborative efforts with UW in Watertown to have the Johnson Creek Cancer Center is just a wonderful entity for our community to have. And perhaps in the future, Dr. Manicus, we can have another podcast focusing a little bit more on prostate cancer treatments for those more advanced stages. But I got to tell you, just listening to you today, I have learned a wealth of information. The subject matter we've covered today is pretty vast. I have not had this knowledge base. Like I said, I do have a prostate, so I feel a lot more educated going forward. It is so wonderful to have you on our podcast today, Dr. Manicus. Thank you.
No, my pleasure. Thank you for the invitation. And anytime we can chat some more about it, you'll never struggle to get me to talk about the prostate.
Well, there's a reason you went into urology, my friend.
Happy to be your local country plumber. And if there's ever any opportunities to further discuss ways to help anybody's life in the bathroom or concerns about possible prostate cancer, I'm more than happy to.
Well, we appreciate that. I like to say I'm the North Pole and you're the South Pole. So,
amen.
But, well, we have to let Dr. Manicus go. Thank you, Dr. Manicus, for your time today. Again, this is your host, Dr. Michael Anderson. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Fortcast. If you're interested, please see our full library of podcasts on our website and do share it on your social channels. Once again, this is Dr. Michael Anderson thanking Dr. Christopher Manicus for joining us today. Have a great day. So long.